I'm going to be telling you about robust speech recognition using dynamic noise adaptation. I guess we'll go right into it. So an outline of the talk, I'll start by giving a brief overview of the area and DNA, review the DNA model briefly, go over how we do inference, and then jump right to experiments and results. Okay, so model-based robust ASR, it's a well-established paradigm. Basically, you use explicit models of noise, channel distortion, and their interaction with speech to model noisy speech. There's been many interesting modeling and inference techniques that have been developed over the last, I'd say, 25 years. Interaction models, there's many references. You'll have to refer to the paper. So one thing that is conjecture to some degree, but I believe it, and that's basically that the relevance to commercial grade ASR has not been definitively established. So why is that? Well, that's because we have promising word error rate reductions on less sophisticated ASR systems. Either they're small training or test sets, or simple pipelines and or artificially mixed data. So we don't know if these techniques actually improve ASR as of this moment. But I'll give you some evidence of at least one model that does improve a state-of-the-art ASR system. Okay, so dynamic noise adaptation, just a review. It's a model-based approach. Essentially, you use a GMM of one sort or another for modeling speech in an evolving model of noise, in this case a Gaussian process model. The features of this, some features of the method are that it's a mismatch model. There's no training required for the noise model. There's no system retraining required. And the technique models uncertainty in the noise estimate, and I'll show you briefly why that's important to good speech denoising. In terms of previous results, actually DNA has been kicking around for a while now. We dust it off every couple years and try it on more realistic data. Previous publications have shown that it significantly outperforms techniques like the AFE and FOMLR on Aurora 2 and the DNA plus Aurora 2 test. These are artificially mixed data sets, though. We've never tried it on real data. So this work I'll talk about today, I'll review some new results on real data using the best embedded speech recognizer that we have. I'll discuss how DNA has been matured for low latency deployments, and I'll show you some results with some gains. For example, 22% word error rate reduction below 6 dB SNR on a system that includes spectral subtraction, FOMLR, and FMPE. Just briefly, here's the DNA generative model. I'll get into the components right away, but basically the idea is that this is a generative model, which is, it's modular. There's a channel model, speech model, and noise model that are combined with an interaction model. And basically you can play with how the pieces are structured and put them together using the generative framework, which is very useful if you want to extend improve the model, change the inference algorithm, make it stronger, etc. Okay, so right into the interaction model in the time domain, the standard distortion plus noise model. In the frequency domain, I think probably most in this room are familiar with this. We approximate the term with a phase, the third term and the sum. In this paper and most other papers is Gaussian. There are some better interaction models out there by Li Dang and others. They're a little bit more computationally intensive, but they are more accurate. So our probability model for the data we observe Y, given the speech X, the channel H, and the noise N in the log MEL power spectral domain is normal distribution with the interaction function F as shown. Okay, so jumping right into the speech model, one thing we changed is we used a band quantized GMM instead of a regular GMM. Essentially, for each state, you have a map to a reduced number of Gaussians at each frequency. So here A maps acoustic state S to Gaussian A in a given frequency band F. The idea is that the number of Gaussians in each band is a lot smaller than the number of states. So this model can be very efficiently computed and stored. See an example of that in a second. The noise model for DNA, it's a simple, as simple a Gaussian process model as you can have. Essentially, we model the noise level as a quasi-stationary process. So the prediction for the next frame, given the previous frame's noise level, is that same value, plus there's some propagation noise gamma in the model capture how the noise evolves over time. This is combined with a simple transient noise model. It's just Gaussian. And the idea here is that the noise level is changing slowly to the with respect to the frame rate, and that the transient noise actually ends up being dominating this. So introducing this additional layer makes it possible to track something that doesn't look smooth at all when you look at it in the log power spectrum. But with this extra layer in the model, which in essence filters out the transient noise, it is a very good model. Okay, the channel model, actually in the past we didn't have a channel model. It was artificial data. We didn't need one. So for the channel model, we've used for this work just a stochastically adapted parameter vector. This is actually the same model that Li Deng used in the past for modeling noise, and worked quite well. Okay, so now we're back to the generative model that I showed you a few slides ago. So now we can explain the boxes briefly. So the channel model, I have a little square for the variable there because it's not actually a random variable. It's a parameter that, and the arrows are showing that it adapts over time. The speech model, the part inside the big gray box, is essentially there's the variables A, F, T, which are the Gaussian indices for a given time and frequency, and the speech, the clean speech that's generated, X subscript F, T. And of course, there's a noise model that I just described. It has two layers to facilitate robust noise tracking and the interaction model I described. One interesting thing is that everything in the box, actually, that's a plate in graphical model notation with a little F in the corner there. That means that this structure is duplicated for all frequency. And actually, the only thing that is not independent in the model, the only thing that binds the estimates over frequency is actually the speech, the component state here, CT. Given CT, the entire model factors. Well, more precisely, for a given segment of data over time and frequency, you have to be given all the states of the speech model for the model to factor over time and frequency. Okay, so how do we do inference in this model? Very quickly, this has been shown before. So the exact noise posterior, because it's a Gaussian process, and you pick up every time you evaluate the GMM, that increases the number of components in the noise posterior by a factor of the number of components. So it grows exponentially with time, the number of components in the noise posterior. So we actually approximate this just as Gaussian in this work. And we've done some investigation of somewhat more complex methods, and so far we haven't seen any advantage of that. But that was on synthetic data. It still needs to be tried for real data. This is just showing how you compute the mean and the variance of that Gaussian. I'll skip right over that. Okay, so likelihood approximation. I showed you before the interaction function. It's nonlinear. So basically, we iteratively linearize it using Algonquin. This is a variant of iterative BTS. Here's the math. I guess one thing is that the one interesting thing is that alpha basically is the ratio of speech and noise and the weights on the two factors in the model, and it actually ends up being just the power ratio of the distorted speech over the total power under the model. That's kind of difficult to understand, so here's a picture. So for a given time and frequency, you have a joint prior for speech and noise in the first image. It's a diagonal covariance Gaussian. The likelihood function at a given frequency, in this case, the observation has intensity of 10 dB. That's what it looks like, and the exact posterior under the model looks like the third image. So what do? We linearize this approximation and iterate. So in this case, you can see that we linearize and compute the posterior, and it's actually nothing like the true posterior. But if we iterate the process, actually we get a result that is very faithful to the true posterior that I showed in the previous slide. So there's two things here. Iteration is important. We know that. Modeling the uncertainty and the noise when the noise is adapting is clearly very important. If I didn't have uncertainty in the noise estimate, then this would have been my answer, which is wrong. Okay, so to reconstruct the speech, this is a front-end technique, at least that's how we've been using it for this work. We run DNA and then reconstruct and feed it into the back end for recognition. And that's just the expected value under a Gaussian, mixture of Gaussians, rather. It's a highly structured mixture of Gaussians at a given time step, given the prior for noise. Okay, so let's just jump straight into some results. So the data we tested on was U.S. English in-car speech, recorded in various noise conditions, mostly cars speeding by, acceleration of the motor and whatnot would be the dominant noises. The training data is 800,000 utterances. That's about 786 hours. Test data is holdout, 128 held-out speakers and approximately 40 hours of data. There's 47 tasks that span a few domains, navigation, command, control, radio, digits, dialing, 7 regional U.S. accents. The models that we used, in the back end, we use pretty standard word internal, plus minus 2 phonetic context with 865 context-dependent states, 40-dimensional LDA features. We built 3 models based on those, an ML model, a clean ML model trained only on data that's 20 dB and above, and an FMPE model. Once trained, we compressed using hierarchical band quantization for efficiency. The DNA speech models, DNA runs at the front end. It has its own speech model, a little GMM. So it's set in the logMAL domain. And actually, it just has 256 speech and 16 silence components. We compressed this model as well to a BQGMM, as I described. So there's actually only 8 Gaussians per dimension you need to evaluate DNA. So it's got the, it's in terms of number of Gaussians, it's similar to what a speech detector would have. So the adaptation algorithms that we tried in conjunction with our testing include spectral subtraction, of course DNA, capsule mean normalization was always in the pipeline, and we tried switching in FMLR and FMPE to see how the techniques interact. So spectral subtraction is basically your standard spectral subtraction module, a model-based speech detector, noise estimated from speech-free frames with a floor value based on the current noise estimate to avoid musical noise. FMLR, this version is an online version that's stochastically adapted every 5 frames. The FMP model implements the transformation using 512 Gaussians, 17 frame inner context and 9 frame outer context. Okay, so this is a pretty busy graph. We'll spend a few minutes taking a look at it. First thing I want you to look at is basically compare the red lines to the blue lines. This compares basically turning when DNA is off to when DNA is on. So first the top red curve is showing the word error rate as a function of SNR. Actually, we have a histogram of how much data is in each SNR bin in the background there. And you can see the number of words on the right-hand side, on the y-axis, rather. So you can see that basically as a general trend that we're getting going from red to green, forget the green curves for now, going from red to blue curves, we're getting significant reductions in word error rate when we turn on DNA. So a little bit more concretely, the red curve with that's dashed with diamonds is just with spectral subtraction, and when we turn on DNA and spectral subtraction, we have the blue curve that's dashed. So we're getting nice gains, especially at low, well, particularly at low SNR. One interesting thing was that when we used a clean DNA model and a clean back-end model, looking at the green curve with the upside-down triangle, you can see that that curve tracks the spectral subtraction curve with it has a multi-condition back end. So basically, DNA is doing as well as spectral subtraction, but if you omit all the low SNR data, which is pretty impressive. Okay, so that's with fMLR off. You can see what happens when you turn fMLR on. So if you're doing noise robustness experiments without fMLR, maybe you should rethink. It has a huge impact on performance, and fortunately, in this case, DNA complements fMLR. It helps it generate better alignments. And again, you can see comparing the, in this case, when spectral subtraction is on and compared to when DNA and spectral subtraction is on. Actually, in this case, there's not a big difference at low SNR. But of course, these are only MLO, maximum likelihood system results, so we're still not using the best system. So then when we turn on FMPE, we see again that in general the word error rate is just dropping substantially everywhere except at low SNR. Actually, it degrades a little bit in the lowest SNR bins. That makes quite a bit of sense because that bin you don't get a lot of training data for, and it's putting a lot of stress on the FMPE model. It has to memorize combinations of speech and noise to do well in that area. And it gets tricky when noise is actually modifying the feature a lot. So here you can see that comparing spectral subtraction on, that's the red diamonds, to the DNA results with and without spectral subtraction, we're getting big gains at very low SNR, and basically until about 15 dB, it's definitely better to turn on DNA. So one thing, I'm not going to go through this huge table. This is kind of daunting, but you can look in the paper for details. But one thing we notice is that we're getting consistent gains at low SNR, but because of the amount of data at higher SNR and the fact that there seems to be just a little bit of degradation from this DNA I'm describing you today, it ends up not helping the FMP system. But since then, we actually figured out how to make them more parsimonious. I can't get into the details here, but at this time, actually, the latest version we have improves on this database. It gives 10% relative gains overall, and below 10 dB, it's heading towards 20% relative. So it's improving our system quite a bit. Okay, so at this point, I'll just wrap up. I mean, in summary, DNA's it's working, and this data is pretty dated now, unfortunately. It's working a lot better. We'll have to wait till the next conference to tell you about the rest because of some patent issues. In terms of future work, I mean, I hope as many of you in the crowd are already aware, when you use a graphical modeling framework, you can it's modular, so you can make parts of the model stronger. You can strengthen your inference algorithms. Obviously, the inference algorithm we have for the noise is very approximate. We have a huge GMM, and we approximate it by a Gaussian at each time step. Another thing would be tighter back-end integration. Of course, there's a lot of people working on that in Mark Gale's team and Microsoft and such. I guess that's pretty much it. And so it's good news for model-based approaches.
Yeah, we do have time for a couple of questions. Sorry. Go ahead. Please use the microphone.
I'm on my way. So it seems like that's a great slide to put up. It seems like it works really great on the cases where your word error rate is very high, but on the like 35 dB SNRs, you start to get degradation from DNA. Here, the little red triangle, it looks like your word error rate is doubled when you turn on DNA. Is that, am I reading that right, or is it halved?
Yeah, that's, I mean, at the
time... That's pretty bad.
Double. Yeah, at the time, that was the big problem with it. But we solved that problem.
Oh, so with the integration with FMPE, you solved that problem?
Just in general, we solved it, but unfortunately, can't tell you yet.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
I think this is just a clarification question. I didn't quite get, amongst all the scads and numbers, whether some of the numbers corresponded to having clean training, the 800 hours, and so all had noise in it, right? So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in general, except for the green curves here, those have a clean back end and DNA model. Everything else is using multi-condition data.
Okay, thanks.
One quick, probably orthogonal question to your research, to speech recognition. Does this DNA have any kind of relevance to, say, speech enhancement in terms of reconstruction, removing noise?
Well, actually, maybe I didn't make that clear. We actually do reconstruct.
Right, yeah, I did. That's why I asked the question.
Oh, okay.
Right. So either from the spectrogram or from, say, truly reconstruct the signal, have you subjectively hear the output or visualize the output?
Oh, yeah, sure. There's been a few publications on it in the past, and they have spectrograms. I didn't put them in this time. I mean, it is in the MEL domain, so I didn't go to the trouble of regenerating the signal to listen to it. But.
Any more questions? All right, one more.
Just one quick question here. So when you compare the performance, you only compare the when the DNA is on, DNA is off, and also you use the SS standard for the spectral subtraction, right?
Yes.
Yeah. The what is the difference between this SS with the standard the VTS approach?
The standard VTS approach?
Yes.
Oh, VTS would be a step up, I'd say, from spectral subtraction. This one line here pretty much sums it up. You use a speech detector, and then based on your segmentation, you estimate the noise based on the frames that are speech free, and then you adapt it according to some forgetting factor. Usually,
but I think it probably that make more sense to compare this with VTS, right? When you use a single Gaussian for noise.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. So. Actually, this spectral subtraction routine is pretty well tuned. So when we ran and turned off the adaptation for DNA, actually, to my slight surprise, the results were the same as with spectral subtraction. So we got quite a bit of gain by turning on the adaptation of the noise. Because if we just initialize the noise model and did VTS, that's what everybody does, initialize on the first 10 frames and then do VTS, that actually doesn't improve our system. You have to adapt it. And the reason that was shocking to me is because in this database, the utterances are 2 to 5 seconds long. So it means that, you know, cars are passing and whatnot, and that's affecting the noise estimate significantly enough that you need to adapt it during the utterance. That's important.
Well, I guess we need to proceed. And thank you again.